Susan, Butcher Box to the rescue. The other night we had some friends over for dinner and we had no idea what to make. And I was like, guess what? We have a freezer full of meat. So my husband went down and thawed out some chicken from Butcher Box and made the best coco van that we've had in a long, long time.
Yeah, you'd have been screwed without Butcher Box because I know you ain't got no time to go to the store right now.
That's true. I don't have time to go shop for meat or pick out the meat or find the best quality, low-priced meat. So ButcherBox does all of that for me.
So true story, my husband's workplace has a Slack channel called Smoked Meats. And I know you can't like win a workplace conversation, but he is now because with ButcherBox, his great cuts of meat to the door, they can cook up and take photos of for his workmates.
I love ButcherBox and I think other people would too.
ButcherBox is the ultimate convenience, delivered right to your doorstep, free shipping always, with curated, customized box plans.
It's 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, pork, raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood.
There are a variety of high-quality cuts at an amazing value with exclusive membership deals. They also provide recipe inspiration, guides, tips, and hacks.
Sign up at butcherbox.com/proof and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer, plus an additional 20% off.
Choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/proof and use code PROOF to choose your free for a year offer. Plus, get $20 off your first order. If you're listening to this show, then I'm going to guess you're a fan of true crime podcasts. So in the mornings, grab your favorite mug and pour yourself a dose of spine-tingling true crime every AM with Morning Cup of Murder. It's a short daily show that's the perfect podcast to incorporate into your morning routine. In less than 15 minutes, you'll hear about a true crime that took place on today's date in history. Each day's dark history lesson will kickstart your morning with intriguing tales of murder, abduction, serial killers, cults, and more.
So pour yourself a piping hot cup of murder every single morning with Morning Cup of Murder. Find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to a special update episode of Proof. I'm here with Jacinda and Kevin to cover several important events that have happened in the past week. Hi, guys.
Hey, Susan.
Hey, Susan.
It's been a big week for you, huh?
It's been a crazy week. I feel like I'm still trying to collect myself after spiraling out for all the chaos in a good way that's been going on.
Tell us what happened.
So we're here. We plan to record sort of a big update about Lee and Kane's case for you. But before we get to that, we also had an even bigger update in another case I've worked on for Adnan Syed. If you have been living under a rock and missed the news, he was released earlier this week after the judge ordered that his conviction should be vacated. And here to talk about that with us is Robbie Chowdhury. Rabia, welcome to Proof.
Hi, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So it's been a week.
It's been quite a week, yeah, but you know, it's been a long time coming, as you know, Susan.
It's been far too long coming, but we always knew one day we'd get here.
I think most people know the backstory, but how did you two meet and start working on this case together?
Twitter
and Susan's blog, and I will never forget the day, Susan. So Susan started blogging about the case and people on Reddit were sharing it. And then I think we started talking over Twitter and I said, you know what? I'm reading your blog and you have like, you're so smart. You're so brilliant. Will you come and like, we'll just work. Like if I give you the files, we work on the case. And Susan comes over and I've got all the files in my like living room or something. And she's like, oh, are you sure you want to do this? This could be a big mistake.
No, I think I said it was a big mistake, but I wanted it anyway.
No, you said it could be. You said it could be.
Well, it wasn't. You were right. It was the opposite of a mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, remember the time I went to your place because the files with Sean T. So that happened.
That is right.
That's incredible that it was just Twitter that brought you two together. And now how many years later, yeah. And this week has just been so exciting for everybody. Congratulations to both of you.
Yeah, it's amazing. And it's amazing to me also that like in the state's motion, is evidence that, you know, Susan and Colin literally like reported years ago, you know, discovered and reported years ago.
That's amazing. Yeah,
our very first episode of Undisclosed, which was just excellent audio quality all around. we covered how not her real name, Kathy, Christy Vinson, had the wrong day. And then, you know, it goes from there. A couple years later, Amy Berg does the HBO special on Anand's case. And she actually finds the school records that prove that.
That proved it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Susan got to that conclusion just by like pulling together all these little threads and pieces and said, it just doesn't, you know, like that was, you know, just saying that, you know, it wasn't definitive, but it was like, probably like it was almost impossible that it would have been the right day. Right. For her to have.
Yeah. Everything's pointing that same direction.
Yeah. But you know, for, and for Amy's documentary and that piece of evidence that came in the documentary to be in the state's motion. Incredible. Once again.
Yeah. So Rabia, what's the best food Anand's had since he got home?
The best food. I don't know, when a man gets up in the middle of the night and eats chicken tenders, that seems like, but he's had everything. He's had Pakistani food. He's had kebabs. He's had probably maybe lobster is the best thing. I don't know. Or cheesesteaks. It depends on what you like best. I'm not really sure. I should ask him though. I haven't asked him what's been his favorite treat so far, but I was like, Anand came out looking all buff. I don't know how long that's going to last.
Well, you've been able to see him and talk to him. How is he doing?
Oh, he's doing great. I mean, the whole plan had been after he got out that, you know, when he'd go home, he would spend a little bit of time with his family and then he would go and he would just be whisked away to where he's staying for the next 30 days. But then the mosque, you know, like is down the road, the community just started dropping by, open door, open house. And he was there for hours greeting people. And he's also not the kind of person turning away. And he was so happy the whole time. He's like, you know what? This was actually an amazing reunion because these were people who'd known him since he was born. And every time I talk to him, he just sounds like, you know, just like he usually does, you know, mostly lighthearted, funny. And he's just hanging in there. But, you know, like, but, you know, he is in a pretrial posture. So there are some limitations to what he can do and say. And he's trying to keep a low profile.
Yeah. One day, hopefully very, very soon, once this is actually finalized and done. I look forward to meeting him.
Yeah, absolutely. That's already been, like, we've already talked about that, Susan, that meeting. But we just got to get through, like, I think these 30 days will determine it.
Yeah, it may be. So I know that Erica, his attorney, has said that it's possible they'll set a trial date for him just as a procedural matter, because I know one thing they're waiting for is DNA testing, which may not be back by the court's 30-day deadline. So that would allow them to continue it without finalizing anything. But if that happened, that'd be just procedural at this point,
I think. And Erica said it would be like a placeholder type of thing, and it's possible, but I'm not worried.
I was going to ask him, but you just explained it, Rabia. So setting a court date would basically just hold it until it just prolongs it a little bit.
It gives them more time to complete their investigation. Right. Otherwise they have like a 30-day deadline to make a decision. And if they don't have Mosby has clearly said that her decision is going to kind of be based on just whatever comes back in the rest of the DNA. So if they don't have it, they might just set a date because they can always, you know, they can always like null pros, even if they set a date, they'll just wait for the DNA. But hopefully, you know, I and Adon's family, we met with Mosby before the hearing on Monday, and we asked, you know, when she expected the rest. And she said she expects the rest of the DNA to come back within the next month or within this coming month.
Yeah, it might get here in time. If not, though, that sounds like that's the plan. And I can't wait for like all the media and like Twitter to like take it the totally wrong way and be like, oh, they are retrying him. So
yeah. And, you know, remember last week when the motion was actually filed and the motion said something like, you know, we're not declaring him actually innocent. And people were like, well, see, that means he's not actually. And I was like, you got to read between like what's actually happening here.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like you can't have it both ways. You can't be like, hey, judge, we are actively investigating, but also we're declaring him is like they have to wait till they're done their investigation.
Yeah. And one interesting twist that's happened is sort of a conflict within the Maryland attorney system, Mosby, the state's attorney, she's the one who was behind this motion at the circuit court. But the attorney general of Maryland, Ryan Frosch, has come out and said that he's been told from his people that no Brady violation was done. So I'm looking forward to get to the bottom of that one.
I mean, you know, at this point, here's how I feel about that whole thing. This is a, it's kind of a, I think a political match between them.
Yep.
And maybe
it's not about Anon.
It's right. This is not about like the record. This is not, I mean, even the state has, the court has accepted the state stipulation that there was a Brady violation. Simple. It's done. There's nothing Attorney General Frosch can now say, I would like to appeal this and I would like to like somehow, you know, have that decision reversed. He can't do it. He can't do it. I mean, there's no, there, it has no actual effect on the case for him to say what he's saying.
Hey everyone, before we continue with this episode, I want to tell you about another podcast. Have you ever wondered what it feels like to watch your house burn down or be attacked by an alligator or learn that your spouse hired someone to kill you? If you're dying to know, then What Was That Like is the podcast for you. What Was That Like is filled with real stories about the most surreal experiences of people's lives. On the show, host Scott Johnson dives deep with his guests into the unbelievable situations they found themselves in, like animal attacks, plane crashes, winning The Price is Right, and more. The show brings you tons of completely surreal, completely true stories, all told through the lens of the person who actually experienced it.
Check out some of these episodes about wild and gripping stories to gain some insight on what it was like to, say, be a professional bridesmaid or lose a leg in a shark attack.
Susan, I think you'd be a really good professional bridesmaid.
And you'd be really good at losing a leg in a shark attack.
Oh, gee, thanks.
So if you want to hear some disturbing and inspiring firsthand stories, you need to check out What Was That Like? Every story is thoroughly researched and fact-checked, so you know even the most bizarre tales are someone's reality. Listen to What Was That Like on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you want to know what it's like to hang out with MS-13 in El Salvador? How the Russian mafia fought battles all over Brooklyn in the 1990s.
Well, what about that time I got lost in the Burmese jungle hunting the world's biggest meth lab? Or why the Japanese Yakuza have all those crazy dragon tattoos? I'm Sean Williams.
And I'm Danny Gold. And we're the hosts of the Underworld Podcast. We're journalists that have traveled all over, reporting on dangerous people and places. And every week, we'll be bringing you a new story about organized crime from all over the world.
We know this stuff because we've been there. We've seen it. And we've got the near misses and embarrassing tales to go with it. We'll mix in reporting with our own experiences in the field, and we'll throw in some bad jokes while we're at it.
The Underworld Podcast explores the criminal underworlds that affect all of our lives, whether we know it or not. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into The Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to The Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in The Daily Book Club.
Yeah. So once that is resolved, once the GPS monitor is off and he is a fully free man, does he have like a bucket list of things to places to go, things to see?
I mean, honestly, we didn't talk about it. We you know, I'm going to shock some people with this. I think Anon wants to go to law school. He wants to finish his bachelor's at Georgetown because he started it, but I guess he cannot continue to be part of it. He's pretty sure since he's no longer a prison scholar. So there's that question of how does he continue that education? And he's talked about law school a couple of times, you know, and I've told him that, you know, listen, if you're thinking about law school because you feel like any pressure from the world, like you got to somehow give back. I was like, you can become a fisherman. You can do anything you want with the rest of your life. You don't have to do anything, but if that's what he wants, that would be awesome. I don't know where else what he really wants is to just spend as much time with his parents as he can. You know, they're both elderly and not well. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think, the top of his bucket list right now.
I mean, the man did bring his homework home with him from prison. So maybe he would be fit in law school. He'll be like his daughter.
It was, you know, that was the one thing he didn't give away from his prison cell. Everything else he gave away. Isn't that crazy?
Is that what he was carrying in that one? I did see one piece of footage of him walking down the street holding a binder full of stuff.
Yep. It was his Georgetown binder that had stickers on it. And the funny thing is, like, so where I was seated right in front of the door that led to the hallway where they would bring him in from. So me and maybe the few people sitting around me could see him before he actually entered the room. And I remember each time he entered, because I think he entered twice, I was like, what is he carrying? Like that thick binder. And I could see the stickers, but you know, my mind was in a million places. So I just didn't make the connection that, oh my God, of course, that's where he's going to school. But yeah, it was really cute when I realized when it finally dawned on me that, oh, that's the school binder.
When was the first time you actually saw him free? I left the courthouse before that part happened. So I saw y'all walk out in the street. But I don't know when he got I saw him get unshackled too, but
that moment, so once the courtroom was empty and it was literally just the four or five of us family. And you know, I'm honorary family at this point. The judge I can't remember. This is what I'm trying to remember, because things were a little bit of a blur. If she asked for the shackles to be removed before everybody else left or after. Did she do that in front of you guys?
Yeah.
Okay. So the shackles have been removed, but, and you know, I spoke to he told me this yesterday. He said, you know, after the shackles were removed, he said the sheriff's deputies kept whispering to him, hey, you can turn around and like smile at your family and wave. And Adnan, having spent 23 years being told, not doing anything that he's not told to do or allowed to do, just wouldn't do it. And so what happened was the courtroom empties. We're sitting there like just in dead silence, like the five of us and Adnan at his table with his attorney. And the judge is looking at papers and she looks up and she says to him, Mr. Saeed, go get up, go to your family.
Wow.
And it was incredible. And that was, oh my God.
That moment.
Yeah. And he gets up and he walks around like that banister. And just knowing we could just walk right out. It's like, you know, you keep expecting somebody to come shackle him. I haven't seen him unshackled since he was 17.
Wow.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Yeah.
I also know there was footage of Susan when the first time she saw him coming out of the courtroom.
Oh, is there?
And it's the first time I've ever seen Susan speechless. Literally speechless.
I was not speechless because someone pointed out that, like, I say very loudly on the live stream, oh shit.
Wait, I gotta see this. I missed this whole scene.
Well, I was talking to some of the non's friends and Amy outside of the courtroom steps.
Okay,
and then I turn around because there's a big commotion and like, I expect it's like, you know, you and his family coming out. Cause I thought he had to be processed out in a couple hours. And then I realized like way too late, like that's him.
Well, let me tell you guys, everybody knew that he was coming home already. So one thing that happened before the judge even ruled, we were waiting for the judge to, I can't remember at what point there was some kind of break. The sheriff's deputy came over to us and said, and was leaning over and saying, okay, here's the game plan. We're going to dismiss people. And then there's a van outside for him. And then we're going to walk out with the family. And we're looking at him like, I'm like, the judge has a rule. Like, what are you? And I was like, okay, Rabia. And I, you know, don't say anything. And I was like, but he has to be processed for a few hours, right? Like that'll take some time. And he goes, we already took care of it. I'm like, holy moly. Yeah. So, but even then it wasn't quite it wasn't until she said it, stated that the motion's been, you know, granted, his conviction's been vacated that's when I like completely broke down. But obviously if I was a little more like with it that day, I would have, and you know, it makes sense with a case this high profile, they have to kind of have everybody like, you know, on alert, knowing their places, knowing the choreography, knowing the movements, how the defendant's going to move. And so they already knew. And I think
there was going to be a reaction. So they had to be prepared for whatever chaos came next.
Yeah. So Adnan said that, you know, when they brought him they brought him like at 5 a.m. from the prison, to the courthouse and into the holding area. He said when he got out of the van, the prison van, usually it would be like COs and stuff that would come get him. He said this time it was the captain. And he's like, okay, that doesn't happen. And so then he was just like, but also over the weekend, we had been told, get him some nice clothes because we don't want him walking out looking raggedy. And we're like, what is this? Are they saying if he walks out, are they saying he's definitely, we're just keeping our breath held and hoping we were understanding the signals the right way. In so many ways, it was exactly as I had hoped and envisioned it all these years. Like I'm like, this is exactly what I had wanted. Like this incredible homecoming, but not just that he's walking out and, you know, is basically exonerated, but also that the investigation remains open. And
that's the shocking part to me.
Yeah,
honestly,
that's
the part I would never have predicted.
Yeah. Yeah. So rare. But I think I even wrote that like at the end of my book, I'm like, you know, my prayer is not just that he comes home, because there's lots of different mechanisms to get him home. But in most cases, we all know the state will just close the case and that's it.
Yeah. I remember reading that part of your book. I'm like, okay, well, that's not going to happen. That's let's keep reasonable hopes here.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I feel like in many ways, Susan, everybody who's worked on this case, I feel like we've all been like freed from it. Finally. I was like, I'm going to print t-shirts that say free Rabia from having to free Adnan.
Yeah. It does mean we have more time for other cases.
100%. 100%. Yeah.
And what Anand has gone through, I mean, if it wasn't for Anand, there's a number of defendants who'd be in prison today.
Yeah.
That aren't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's
no, absolutely.
I mean, that's worth pointing out, though. So back in what, 2017, 18, around then, Anand was offered a plea deal.
He was, yeah. That's the thing about the Frosch thing, which makes me crazy. It's like, hello, Mr. Frosch, you're the same man who was willing to let him out thinking he's guilty and claiming he's guilty.
Yeah.
But it's not about that. It's
he turned it down. And that's where we are now. That was such a bold move. And like, I remember at the time I was conflicted. I'm like, I even felt really good about the Supreme Court hearing, which turned out to not be good. And even with that, I was like, oh God, how can he turn down this?
Yeah. I mean, look, I wasn't privy to the fact that he had even been, it was supposed to be like a secret plea deal that he had been even offered it. And then he later, that he turned it down. I found out after he turned it down, but you know, Frosch wouldn't have offered it if Frosch didn't think that we were going to win at the Maryland Supreme Court. And so when we lost, I remember the first time I went to see Adnan after we'd lost, I think about 4 or 5 weeks had gone by, because I literally just shut completely down. I just couldn't think about the case. I couldn't face him because I didn't know where to go from there. And when I went to see him, he had lost like 40 pounds. His beard had gotten all this white hair in it. And he sobbed. And I've never in all those years, 20 years, I had never seen him cry before. And so it was me and my husband, just to give him comfort. And then I was like, why did I do this? I said to him, Adnan, Frosch wanted 4 more years of your life. Give me those 4 years. I'm going to make sure you're out without a guilty plea. Give me the 4. And after that moment, when we left, I was like, shit, why did I say that? Because then I was like, the countdown is on and the 4 years would have been up this coming March. So I'm glad we made the deadline.
You only need 3.5.
Yeah. Only 3.5. But believe me, I've been nervous because I'm like, we're getting close to that promise of mine. But, you know,
what do you think it was, Rabia, that moment where you saw him breaking down for the first time? Do you feel like at that moment he kind of gave up hope, or what was it, do you think?
I don't think any of us, that was the scary thing about that time, because it was like, this is 2 courts overturning your conviction, right? Like with a issue that strong, the alibi issues just seemed like an easy win, frankly.
He had some incredible long shot wins. And for this to be what turned him down, like.
Right. And so I think what it was that this, he did say, he's like, did I make a mistake in turning? And I was like, you didn't. He's like, okay, I didn't. But this was just like, I think his having your hope, like hope is a scary thing. I always, whenever we work with any of our defendants' families, I'm always a little nervous about like, you know, the expectation and the hope there. Right. And I think it was him, like just, you know, the grief of not having hope. And in those, and for those six months, actually even longer than that, I didn't have any hope. I didn't know what to do next. I was like, I don't know where to go.
There was no clear, like, where do you turn at that point? It was like back to zero. It was a reset.
Yeah.
He still had options. There were still things on the table, but like there was no inertia behind any of them. There was no clear way forward.
Yeah. And I didn't know, you know, I pulled together on the advice of another friend who works with the DOJ. She's an attorney. She said, listen, what you need to do is like put together kind of a legal brain trust, you know, a bunch of different lawyers, get them in a room and then like say, this is where we are. What should be next steps? That brain trust led to, and Erica Suda was part of that little brain trust, led to me deciding that, well, first making the decision that we did need a new legal team.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Well, it's been far too long a time coming, but we're finally here.
I know. I'm so excited. I have been one of our undisclosed, actually a number of our undisclosed defendants have hearings coming up.
Yeah.
But in one of the cases, Greg Lance case, when we filed the DNA petition, the DA filed a opposition brief that's like 70 pages long. And I just want to burn Putnam County to the ground. So I'm like, as soon as the non-stuff is over, I'm going out to Putnam County, get this guy voted out or something. You know what I mean? But it's like, it was just too much. I couldn't give attention to both things at once. And so I'm happy that I can give attention to other cases now too. And
Putnam County is not ready for the full Rabia.
I will be there.
Well, I want to just read something that Colin posted the other day on Twitter, undisclosed. 27 cases covered, 13 exonerations, 2 stays of execution, 1 commutation, and 1 grant of parole. I mean, that is pretty kick-ass. That's amazing.
It is.
It's amazing.
It is.
It's all because of Anon.
Well, I mean, I think Susan and Colin had a lot to do with it. They had almost everything to do with it. But certainly Anon did ignite it. But let me just, I want the whole world to know this. And I'm going to do that gratitude thread at some point when I can catch a breath. But Susan and Colin, when they worked on Adnan's case, they didn't make a single penny off of it. It was thousands of hours of work that was completely voluntary. When we actually got some sponsors for our beautifully produced podcast, every dime of it was put in his trust fund because we've had to pay lawyers all these years. And so the debt that's owed to Susan and Colin. And I think Susan is the one who said, oh, by the way, Georgia Innocence Project reached out to me and then just kept the ball rolling.
Yeah, one case after another.
So yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Rabia, for coming on. And
that is my child's iPad. I'm so sorry. Let me get out of the way. All right, guys. Thank you so much. Yeah. And thanks for all your work, too.
Thank you.
Thank you,
thanks
Rabia,
for covering this. All right. Bye, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
We also have some big news in Leon Kane's case from season 1 of Proof. The Georgia Innocence Project, who represents Lee, has filed 2 filings on his behalf. They filed a habeas petition in Coffee County, Georgia, and an extraordinary motion for a new trial in Floyd County.
Well, I mean, that's a hugely exciting development, right? Because
it's a huge step forward. It is the first step to getting them back in court, and they have a lot of grounds to raise. And it's not clear on the timeline exactly of when these motions will be heard in court, but there'll be 2 different proceedings going on, the one in Coffee County and then the one in Floyd. And hopefully we'll have more news there soon.
Just real quickly, because I know everyone hears the term habeas, but I think few people know what it means. As I understand habeas, it basically is asking for a hearing for the court to rule if someone's being sort of wrongfully imprisoned. Is that right?
Yeah, habeas means like of the body. And a habeas petition is always filed wherever physically someone is held. It is a challenge to their custody and is being filed in Coffee County because that is where Lee is being held. And coincidentally, or not so coincidentally, it's also where Kane's story is being held. He was transferred there recently, perhaps because the state foresees that there will be habeas petitions for both of them in the near future. And this way they can be heard in one hearing instead of 2.
So this is the first time they're back together in the same prison in several years, right?
It is the first time in several years, yeah. The fourth time overall over the 2+ decades they've been together in prison. But it is the first time in several years they've seen one another.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day, you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily wherever you cast your pod.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. but we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to witness a murder?
Forrest grabbed the knife and then just stabbed Johnny in one motion.
Or how it feels to be shot?
I was immediately hit by a barrage of bullets.
Or how you would react if your spouse hired someone to kill you?
And he was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a stalking victim.
Came back upstairs, and when I came back and turned the corner into my room, I saw him standing there.
You'll hear from a man who was kidnapped and tortured.
I would do anything, say anything, to simply get away.
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Take a deep breath. Oh my God! Take a deep breath. Oh my God! Take a deep breath. Oh my God!
Real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
So the habeas petition will be heard in Coffee County. And then what's the motion that will be heard in Floyd County?
So in Floyd County, if there is an extraordinary motion for a new trial, these are typically filed most often in like DNA hearings. They allow for a broader range sort of claims to be raised than a habeas does. And in this case, what the Georgia Innocence Project has filed is a motion stating that the conviction of Lee Clark is based on evidence that no longer stands, that the entire state's case has been demolished, and that new investigation and new evidence has proven all of it to be bunk, essentially.
And my understanding, Susan, is that that motion is using a lot of the stuff we found out during the investigation we did for proof, specifically in this case, some of the issues surrounding Charlie Childers and his testimony, and also Angela Bruce and her testimony.
Yeah, the motion refers to us as investigative podcasters and talks about our findings about Charlie and Angela Bruce, because really, at the end of the day, Angela Bruce and Charlie Childers were the state's case. They had other various evidence about Freebirds and the gang, but the only direct evidence that came from the party, Angela Bruce, and what Charlie Childers allegedly saw or didn't see. And that evidence, essentially, as we discussed in the show, it's just not there.
And when you say direct evidence, just it's been a while and someone wants to go back and listen to the podcast, but it's direct evidence linking Lee to the crime, putting Lee at the Bowling's trailer the night Brian was shot.
I mean, the state had evidence about that they said proved that there was a gang called the Freebirds. As we discussed in the show, there's reason to be skeptical of that, but that's also not evidence of murder.
Right.
The evidence of murder came from Angela Bruce and Charlie Childers.
So, Susan, how optimistic are you as an attorney of these two filings?
I mean, I never get optimistic because that asks for trouble, but I'm optimistic. they're very strong motions, and nothing is ever given in this realm. Nothing's ever a foregone conclusion, but there's a lot of material that the motion has to work with, and it's just a very strong filing. I mean, the state's case has nothing left to it. Now, the only possible hurdle is that in Georgia, it is very difficult to bring what's called like a successive habeas petition. You only get one, typically. And if you file one and you lose, you're done. Unfortunately, Lee Clark, when he was just a few years into prison in 2002, he filed a pro se habeas. And he represented himself. He wrote it, filed it himself, showed up in court. And when he got to court, the judge asked him, like, did he want to proceed? And he realized he was in over his head. He didn't know what he was doing. And he said, no, he wanted a continuance. Now, unfortunately, in 2016, that habeas was officially dismissed. If that hadn't happened, then GIP could have amended the original habeas that was filed by Lee pro se, and gone from there. Unfortunately, it was dismissed a few years back. So technically he's had his one shot at habeas. Now, luckily, there is a recent precedent from the Supreme Court of Georgia holding that this bar to successive habeas petitions does not apply in the case of newly discovered evidence that could not have been found sooner. And that's from the case of Watkins v. Ballinger, i.e. Joey Watkins, at his last round for the Supreme Court of Georgia. And I think there's a very good chance that Lee's case falls under that category of new evidence that Lee will not be penalized for not having found sooner.
Well, how could he have found it when he was filing from prison?
I mean, that's being too practical because courts often don't care about that. This will be litigated. Well, it will likely be litigated. And what the GIP will have to show is that reasonably, Lee could not be expected to have found it in large part because this evidence was hidden by the detectives and that his failure to find it was not because of any negligence on his part, but because the investigators made sure they covered the tracks.
And Kane has representation as well now, right?
Yes, Kane now has counsel. After the podcast, we were able to put him in touch with someone who now represents him. And he has not filed his own motions yet, but hopefully in the next few weeks, he too will be able to file. And potentially their hearings will be heard at the same time. Although that's not been finalized yet.
Well, so 20 some years later, they could be standing side by side in court, just like they were during the trial.
They could be, only they'll be doing it in both Floyd County and in Coffee.
And they only need one of these. Each of them needs one of these to succeed.
Yeah, there's two separate motions, two separate filings, and they stand alone. So they could win both or win one, and the result would be the same.
That's incredible. So what's the next steps? The court has to review these, and then...
The next step is to get a hearing date. At that point, various deadlines, the clock starts ticking on the state's end, and they'll have to file oppositions to them. So my suspicion is that they'll probably wait until Kane has also filed, but that remains to be seen. Lee is in a great place right now. Courts can go in different directions. There's no guarantees, but I do feel good about these filings.
It's a slow process. I mean, it feels like it's gaining momentum, but it also feels like it's hurry up and wait, sort of. 2 years ago when we started, nothing like this was even on the horizon. And now the motions have been filed and it feels exciting. And like you said, cautiously optimistic. Don't want to jump the gun on anything, but hopefully momentum is moving in the right direction.
And in every case I've ever worked on, you never know quite when the dam's going to break. Things can seem like they're going well and moving ahead fast, and they'll stall out forever. And then suddenly one day, everything springs into motion, like Anand's case. And within 2 weeks, he's home. So there's still a journey ahead for both Lee and Kane, but this is a pretty big step in that direction.
And you two have momentum building for season two of Proof. Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, we're looking at some cases and narrowing it down and hope to start production in the next couple months and to launch season two in March of 2023.
Great. Well, this is all exciting stuff.
And we'll keep you updated about Lee and Kane's case as things go forward. And in the next, 2 weeks, Joey Watkins from season two Undisclosed is back before the Supreme Court of Georgia for his oral arguments. So... a lot of cases, a lot of activity these days.
Well, thanks everyone for listening. And if you haven't, please subscribe. That way you'll be alerted for every time we have an update. And there should be updates coming up, like Susan said, on Joey Watkins, even on Adnan and what's happening with his case with Lee and Kane, and also updates on season two. So stay tuned and thanks everyone for listening.